Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
All right, we got us a room full here. Well, not a room full, but there's three of us in the room, and normally there's only two, and Stockton's here too. I mean, we really have a full complement today. I'm Andy Griffin. Welcome to the program. It's 9:09 on this Wednesday. Sean Christensen, his usual appearance. I misspoke yesterday, by the way, Sean. I was introducing, billboarding, who was going to be on the show, and I was like, I think it's County Commissioner Day tomorrow, so we're going to hear Adam Snow. You're not the County Commissioner, and I realized right probably 10 seconds after I said that and went to news, I'm like, wait a minute, Sean's coming tomorrow. What am I doing? But thank you, Sean, for coming.
I'm sure Adam Snow called you within moments and was like, hey, I'm not on tomorrow, because he listens constantly, right?
Yeah, he does listen. Maybe not constantly, but he does listen. That's great. And you brought a friend. Why don't you introduce your friend?
I did. So this is my friend. This is John Cole. And he is our treasurer and board member at the St. George Area Chamber of Commerce. And he owns a company called Redstone Companies. And he's an investor. He's a business coach. He's a business owner in many different ways and has bought and sold and gone through many, many businesses over the years. So welcome, John.
Thank you. Good to be here.
John was telling me he moved here in 88. And so he's a newcomer like me. I've only been here 32 years. You've been here, 37 years or something. But if you ask people who grew up here, like Stockton in that other room, although we have been here longer than he's alive, we are newcomers. We are not natives here because we haven't been here long enough, I guess.
It's great. It's great, great place to be, great place to raise a family for sure.
When I moved here in 93, St. George had 35,000 residents. It's a little bigger now. Do you remember how big it was when you moved here?
I just remember being small. Remember what the roads used to look like and certainly evolving all the time.
Yeah. Well, John, welcome. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate it. Should we get a little background on John first before we get rolling?
Sean, yeah, let's
good
do
with that. All right, John, tell us about yourself.
So as mentioned, raised here in St. George for the most part, moved here as a child and had an opportunity to go to Dixie High, Dixie Middle, Dixie State College.
You're a Flyer and a Rebel back in the day. Huh?
That's right. So, been here a long time and been fortunate to be involved with businesses, helped run a company for many years that I did not found, but spent a lot of time there as an executive, and we sold that to an investment group about 10 years ago. And I've always loved business. I love seeing ideas take off. I love people going after goals. And throughout that process, I've had an opportunity to invest in a lot of different businesses and be involved as a consultant and just help and try and do things and fail at things and just keep going.
Recently, several communities in Southern Utah were rated as best places to start a new business. Have you seen that firsthand then? Have you watched different businesses flourish and succeed in this environment?
Absolutely. There are a lot of different resources here, and just the environment, the entrepreneurial spirit here. People usually like to try to work with one another and try to help one another, and so as people are trying to work through business challenges, there's usually people they can fall on and lean on and get that help.
And you're a business consultant right now, right?
Correct.
What are the most difficult businesses to succeed here? And then if you were looking for, I know there's no such thing as a guarantee or a slam dunk, but if you were looking for a business that's probably going to succeed, what would that be? The two ends of the spectrum there.
That's a good question. I think a lot of times a team is very important. I mean, that's, as an investor, you're looking at the team almost more than you are on the business idea itself. And I think that's one of the things is, as we continue to grow, we're thriving. There's a lot of opportunity here. But even some of those businesses that are coming here, they're trying to find, more people, more employees to meet some of those needs. And so it really depends on the type of business. There's a lot of different challenges that some may face. And we've definitely got variety. We're getting more variety here.
Okay. He dodged the question a little.
He did. He'd make a great politician.
Yeah. but the volatile wise, I'm thinking restaurants are pretty volatile, right? That's an industry that, even with a good team, if you don't have the right product, you're probably in trouble. Is that true?
I haven't done as much with restaurants, but certainly, there's challenges with those. And any business, not run properly is going to have some struggles.
Now, I'm a conservative guy. I've never invested in I don't like taking chances. I don't know if Sean knows that about me, but I'm not a risk taker. My son, however, for whatever reason, my oldest son, he's like, yeah, let's give it a try. He'll, you know, let's run it up the flagpole, see if anybody salutes. You know, that kind of a personality. And so he buys real estate, he buys business, whatever. So, but for me, if I were to invest in a business, is there one that you'd say, well, that if you get the right team, this is going to succeed? Is there a type of business that you think would probably do okay, no matter what?
You know, I talked to a lot of other investors. 2 years ago, we started the Red Rock Angels group to bring investors and entrepreneurs together. Mm-hmm. And we see a lot of variety. And looking at different types of businesses, some investors really know that tech space. They know the startups. They know that area. And I'm kind of more on the traditional business where I like being able to see and touch something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really depends on investor appetite. I like a lot of those traditional businesses because I can make adjustments and pull levers in something that I understand. But certainly, you know, invest where you know and understand.
I had a friend who owned a whole bunch of, I won't say what restaurant it was, but a chain restaurant, owned a whole bunch of them. And he said the absolute number one most important thing, I remember him saying it to me over and over again. He says, you got to have a good manager. You got to have someone mm-hmm. that runs not just one store, but all the stores. He says, if you don't have that, you're going to kill yourself trying to run these businesses. Is that pretty accurate, John?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, team makes up everything. And if you're not taking care of your employees, I mean, it's going to be a challenge. And having a good manager that respects people and treats those people in a positive way, they're going to want to be there and help build the business themselves.
Is there a business, an idea in St. George that it maybe is outrageous and you wouldn't think would fit here, but you think maybe we can make it work? I got a great opportunity to go to Europe this summer, and it was amazing to me. Like, if you go to New Jersey, there's a pizza place on every corner. If you go to Europe, there's a bakery on every corner, and not just a bakery. They have like 40 different things. You know, it's not like, you know, there's a donut shop. These are real bakeries with all these incredible selections. If I say wanted to open a European style bakery in St. George, could I make that work?
You know, I'm always surprised at sometimes the things that do work.
Yeah.
You know, there's sometimes I've consulted with businesses and I just thought, you know, I don't know if this is going to work. And yet people are persistent and they stick with it and they succeed. And so it's really hard to predict. I mean, sometimes what seems like the best idea, you're thinking, how could this fail? And, you know, who knows? Maybe it's too premature. Maybe it's, you know, not the right team. You know, maybe there's other economic things, but it is. It's a roller coaster running businesses. And sometimes things don't, well, not sometimes, most often things don't go the way you're expecting.
Right.
And you have to navigate that and constantly be willing to adapt.
My buddy, Chris Connors, a friend of ours, Sean, who runs Farmstead, he's a big believer in that first thing you said. You got to have a good team, and he believes you got to treat your employees right and have a good team, and if you do that, it will succeed, and he's proven it. I mean, Farmstead is going crazy right now.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, John knows Chris really well. Chris Connors actually sits on our board as well, so
nice.
We all get to spend a bit of time together talking and strategizing together, and you know, it's interesting. I had a friend who many years ago, I think it was about 12 years ago at this point, maybe 10 years ago, he moved down to St. George because he was just sick and tired of the weather up in Salt Lake.
Don't blame him there.
Yep. and he brought his wife along and his kids, and they weren't as excited about moving to St. George as he was. But he came down here with literally only his experience from up in Salt Lake being a developer and a real estate agent. And man, he found his niche down here, and he started building short-term rentals that were zoned properly, actually legal short-term rentals,
yeah.
Right? And he looked for land, and he brought in investors, and I mean, he's done incredibly well. So, Anthony's just been killing it over the last 10 years. Yet he came down here and he didn't have anything planned. I remember I was living in Texas, or maybe I was in New York at the time. But he's like, yeah, we're going to move to St. George. I said, oh, do you have a job down there? He's like, no, but I'm done living in Salt Lake. And he just came down, and he's done an incredible job. So, you know, I mean, it is the drive. Like John says, you come down here, you see an opening like Chris Connors did with a European French-style bakery. And you create incredible stuff. And now he's got 3 stores, looking at opening a 4th, all here in southern Utah. He's got a big manufacturing plant in Leeds. It's incredible.
Yeah, incredible. And by the way, we don't want to turn this into a commercial for Farmstead, but oh man, they are so good. In fact, I've unbeknownst to me, my daughter now has a tradition. She's up at BYU, but anytime she comes to Southern Utah, she's like, oh, I'm so happy Dad's going to take me to Farmstead for lunch.
I love that it's all zero calorie. It just total health food.
Yeah.
Might as well be eating a salad when you eat one of those George sandwiches. So
zero calorie. John, we didn't learn anything about your personal life. You're married and kids, I assume?
Yep. Got three kids and a great wife and family's great.
Kids still in the house or are they grown and moved out?
Yes. Yeah, so my oldest just got her license last week.
Oh, so, fun.
That's saving us a lot of time and she's able to drive herself now.
That's true. I remember when our oldest got his license and he became the taxi driver. Now, mom and dad don't have to run the kids everywhere anymore. Your kid can do it. So that's nice.
She's always volunteering to run those work errands and everything else. Yeah, it's great. Like it.
John's got one of those little bitty trucks, the ones that are like the flat cab with a flat bed on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And does like 30, 35, I think it's top speed on it.
51.
51? Oh, 51, wow. Right? He must have removed the governor, put a turbo on that.
Still can't get on the freeway, but
it'll get up for 29 horsepower.
And he was selling it at one point, and then he stops. I was like, John, why'd you take that off of Facebook Marketplace? And he's like, well, it's a manual transmission. He wanted his kids to learn to drive a manual. Am I telling this story correctly?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah. And so his daughter that just got her license, she knows to drive a manual. Is she driving that?
No.
No,
she's got a different car, but it's been fun. You know, all my kids have gotten to practice with it around the house, and it's like just a little oversized golf cart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Street legal.
I remember one time we sold a car. It was a manual transmission, and we met the buyer at the Smith's parking lot just down the road here on Bluff Street. And she brought cash for the car. And it was a couple thousand. It wasn't a ton of money, but we got in our car to leave, and she went and sat in the passenger side of the vehicle, and I was like, I wonder if something's wrong. So I got back out of the car, went over and knocked on the window, and she rolled down the window and said, and by the way, that was back when you actually rolled down the window. Anyway, and I said, everything okay? And she said, oh, yeah, I'm just waiting for my friend to come. And I said, well, don't you want to drive your new car? And she said, I don't know how to drive a stick shift. She bought a car she couldn't even drive.
I hope they taught
her how to do it. But as funny as that was, about 3 months ago, my daughter bought a stick shift, and she doesn't know how to drive one either. So,
and how is she now at driving that stick shift?
She hates it. Her husband bought it, but she had to pick it up here in St. George. She lives in Cedar, and she couldn't get it home, and she kept stalling it. And
I read a story of a gentleman that had success in business and ended up buying his dream Lamborghini, and the truck driver was rolling it out of the semi, and he said, why is there a third pedal?
Oh, no.
So that's the clutch. He says, well, how do I work that? And he paid the truck driver $400 to teach him how to drive a stick.
So we can drive his $750,000 Lambo. Huh?
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. We're talking with Sean Christensen, Chamber of Commerce. You have a couple of events coming up, big events, right? First of all, today maybe not as big, but a big one on Saturday. Tell us about them.
Yeah. So today we have our Bills, Rights, and Bites. So we partnered
Slow down. Bills, Rights, and Bites. That sounds political.
It does. It is, right? Okay. We partnered with Intermountain Health about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and started putting on this monthly lunch. Well, we'll bring in elected officials. Today's like a preview of the legislative session.
Okay.
So some of our representatives will be there to talk about what's coming up and bills to keep an eye on throughout the legislative session. And then that happens at the Select Health Auditorium over on Foremaster.
Okay, cool.
And Intermountain Health provides lunch for that. So, and it's not just chamber members. We open it to the whole community. We want as many there as possible. We can fit over 100 people in that room. We usually get 30 to 40. And so, yeah. So if you,
I think you just said free food. I believe that's what you said.
Yeah. So it'd be great to run out of food today. So yeah, 11:30 over there. We network for about the first half hour, 11:30 to 12.
And then do you know who the speakers are? You said legislators. He's going to look that up while I fill time.
I'm sorry, Sean. I shouldn't have put you on the spot. I know it's some of our state representatives, but I don't have names for you right here. What I had pulled up is to be able to tell you who our finalists for our business awards that in our gala on Saturday.
And that's the other, that's the big one we were talking about. Tell us about your gala.
So this is the second largest event we put on by
the way, I saw a post the other day that said, do you say it gala, gala, or gala? And apparently there's no right answer. Everybody says it differently.
It's correct.
I always said gala, but apparently gala or gala also was okay. But you have a G-A-L-A coming up.
Yes, I do. And so by attendance, it's our second largest event. We have 370 people coming.
Nice.
And we're holding it at Black Desert Resort. It's going to be in their ballroom there.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And yeah, we sold out a couple weeks ago. We've got these incredible businesses. We give out 5 awards. And we do it Oscar style. So we have a selection committee. None of our paid staff is on that selection committee. We want it to be legitimate and uphold, you know, the standards that we've set for these businesses.
So do they know when they're there at the event that they have already, have you told them in advance?
No. So there's 3 finalists for each award. So we had over 50 nominations. And then our selection committee narrows it down to 3 finalists for each award.
Incredible.
And also selects a winner.
I wasn't invited, so I assume I am not winning any of those.
Well, you got to nominate Town Square Media for it in order for you to be. That is the interesting thing. When we started doing this, one of the first things we said was just nominate your own business. Well, Utah in general, and especially Southern Utah, there's a certain humility around
this
kind of thing.
It's true, yeah.
And it's like we don't want to toot our own horn, but in reality, this is how this is done in most places. You know your KPIs, you know your numbers, you know your growth and all of that, and so you can share the most information possible about the business that you're running in order to be considered for the award. So we get self-nominations, and then we have people that will nominate businesses. And
it's like if you go to a job interview, that is not the time to be humble. That is the time to tell what you've done, or you're not going to get the job.
I should have had you with me when we announced this, Andy. You said it better than I've said it over the last 2 years. So, yeah.
Well, you can use that now.
Yeah, I will. Okay, I'm stealing it. I'll give you credit the first time, and then it's mine from there on out.
You got it. All right, you do have the finalists, though, in front of you?
Yeah.
All right, let's
hear it. Guys are curious, so we have our Paragon Award, and our finalists for that are Whitware Hospitality, RAM, Aviation Space and Defense, and Tuacon. And then our hometown hero is American Red Cross, TDS Telecommunications, and Root for Kids. Our Rising Star Award is Elevated Networks, Biscuit Bus, and While You're in Town. Our Thrive Award is Wilding Wallbeds, Planston Administration, and InfoWest. And then our Trailblazer Award is Alive and Well, Zeke, and Beet Bread. And so each of these, they kind of focus on a different part of the life cycle of a business. So some of them are for businesses less than 5 years. Some you have to have been open for at least 5 years. One you have to have been open for at least 15 years plus. So we wanted to cover the gamut and recognize businesses. And then we do it Oscar style. Golden Envelope presenter.
Wow.
They announce it, and we welcome them up for an acceptance speech. If they go long, we start playing music loud. It's the whole thing. We have a halftime show.
Will Will Smith be there to slap people?
No, Will Smith. Okay. But Nick Chamberlain will be there to play the halftime show. He's he grew up in Tokerville. And I told him to dial it back on the polygamous jokes this coming year. He was a little out of control last year, so he's awesome. He had a ball, and we had a lot of fun.
You got to joke about what you know, right?
Okay.
By the way, you mentioned Root for Kids, a finalist for one of the awards, Susan Leonelli, who has been a sunshiner for a while. I don't know if she still is, but she is retiring at the end of this month from Root for Kids. She is also going to be on my show here, and I think it's 2 weeks from today, yesterday, something like that.
Well, Suzanne's she's really been an outstanding CEO for Root for Kids. Her passion around what they do at Root for Kids is second to none. And just her enthusiasm, her energy to be at everything and anything. She's been very visible in the marketplace and kept Root for Kids top of mind. We're going to miss her.
And by the way, she just got engaged to a friend of mine, a pickleball buddy of mine named John.
So, So where do you rank? Are you better than John, or John better than you in pickleball? What would you say?
Well, I have the problem with my legs, so I don't.
Oh, we're making excuses now.
No, okay. I'm just saying. I think skill wise, we're pretty close, but he is definitely quicker than me.
A little more mobile.
I can't run like I used to run. So you guys, you play pickleball, John?
A little bit, but okay. My wife just smokes me every time we play. So I gotta practice up a little bit.
That's awesome.
Well, you're gonna have plenty of time because you have nothing else to do right now.
I was watching the Masters of Pickleball the other day on ESPN.
Masters of Pickleball.
The Ocho or whatever. It was like one of the far down ESPN.
27, yeah.
But I had my son sitting there who loves to play pickleball. And I was like, what do you think? And when we were first watching, he's like, I could take him. And after 5 minutes, he's like, nope, I couldn't take him.
Well, you know, we have, and I hate to get off on this tangent, but no, I don't, because I love pickleball. But Utah Tech had, I think, the number one ranked pickleball team in the country.
Yep.
And we have the best collegiate female in the country was at Utah Tech. And this is a hotbed. We're serious about our pickleball.
This is like the mecca of pickleball.
I think so.
People come to Little Valley to pay homage, I think. And it's incredible. We have our Arthur Ashe Stadium over there. Yeah. I don't know if we've named it yet, but that's what I call it.
We should. I think the people of Seattle would take exception because that's where it was invented, and they feel like they are the center of pickleball. And, of course, a lot of pickleball in Florida, too. But
yeah.
I believe this is the place, as Brigham Young once famously said, right? This is the right place. So we're talking with Sean Christensen from the St. George Area Chamber of Commerce, as well as John Cole, who is. Tell us about your business consulting now. What is it you do? You say, I mean, I hear that name, I consult. I'm a business consultant. What does that mean? Do you, like, do people pay you to come in and evaluate their business?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've worked with businesses of all different sizes. I mainly focus on like $1 million to $10 million in revenue. I have consulted with some businesses over $100 million in annual revenue.
Big ones.
But usually it's going in and trying to figure out how to make the business more efficient, more profitable. A lot of times somebody has started a business, they're starting to see some really good success and traction, and they're just saying, hey, you know, I'm not making as much money as I thought I should for, you know, $4 million a year in revenue. So we go in and look at it and say, how do we make this more efficient? How do we make you more money?
Obviously you want to name names, but can you give us an idea what type of businesses you're talking about?
I've done all sorts of businesses. Some have been manufacturers, some have been online retailers, all sorts of, advertising businesses, and a lot of different things that people are looking at. Every business has challenges, and so being able to step in as a third party, different set of eyes, and with my past experience, is able to look and see, you know, what I can do to help solve some of those problems.
Very cool. He's John Cole. Are you still part of Redstone, or is that, you
are? Yeah, so I'm a group called Redstone Companies.
Okay, very cool. Well, John, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Bills, Rights, and Bites.
Oh, my gosh.
Did I get
it? Good job. You nailed it.
That's today, 11:30 over at the hospital.
The Select Health Auditorium. So if you know where the Imaging Center is, across the street, what is that, just south of the hospital.
Okay.
It's just on the first floor there in their auditorium. It'll be like being back in college. You sit in the seat, you pull the little tray up in front of you.
Food, and then take some notes. And usually your speakers have a little crowd involvement, too. And that's today. And then Saturday, the big gala.
It's
Saturday.
If you didn't get your tickets, you can watch on our Facebook page. We'll run a Facebook.
I'll be there.
We will announce the winners real time on Facebook as they win. Then our social media manager will post it. And
it'll be out there at Black Desert, right?
Yep, exactly.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys, for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to check weather. We'll be back with Dave Romer after this timeout.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Here we are on North Bluff Street. I'm Andy Griffin. It's a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday out there. It's a bit cold. Even the tough guy Dave Romer has a jacket on. So. What is that on your... It's looks like a skeletal lizard or something. I don't know what that is. It's the
Arc'teryx logo.
Oh, okay. All right. So, cool. Well, Dave, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on today.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
Appreciate you being here. We have a big event on Monday night in Washington, D.C., the inauguration of the president. Thank goodness, finally. a new president. But with a big event, there logistically are some big things that have to happen. Now, obviously, Washington, D.C., this is not their first rodeo. They've been through it a lot. But
yeah, once or twice.
We have a guy who's already had two attempts on his life. Probably maybe would have been more that they foiled before they got very far. And then you have, unfortunately, his political opponents saying, well, he's like Hitler. He's like, you know, and he doesn't deserve to. He cheated.
Only fanning the flames, right?
Yeah, kind of. So you got, I mean, sad to say, but you got a few nut jobs in our country who think this Mr. Trump guy needs to die, which kind of exasperates the whole problem, Dave. So I thought it would be appropriate to maybe talk a few minutes about trying to keep the inauguration safe, trying to keep Donald Trump safe. I imagine, and you have some history in this kind of stuff.
Right.
I imagine this is a big job.
That's an understatement.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here trying to think through some of this, and I'm just like, wow, what nightmare fuel.
Seriously. Oh, man.
All of your event security stuff is going to vary. I mean, it's never easy. It's always a challenge. But luckily for him, in the sense that it's a government thing, a Secret Service thing. So as far as resources, they've got pretty much whatever they want, which does simplify things a little bit. But it's still not easy. But I mean, you've got for this type of event, you're not worried about letting a bunch of traffic into that area necessarily. You're going to close all that off. Cutting off vehicle checkpoints makes that a lot easier as well. But you know, just entry checkpoints, CCPs, that's still not going to be an easy deal. You've got citizens, right? So these aren't criminals. These aren't people you can just arrest and detain or do whatever. Like, you've got to treat them a certain way.
Do you think there will be watching metal detectors or some kind of gun technology recognition somewhere in that area that will stop them from even getting close?
I mean, I would be shocked if they didn't, at least for the main areas. I mean, if you're doing like a motorcade and stuff like that, you're going to be limited on the ability, right? Yeah. I mean, if you're just letting people line the streets, you can't realistically
stop everybody.
Yeah, you can't realistically do that for every single person getting every aspect of that, which makes it tough. And you know, obviously, they've got up armored limo and all that, which can take, I mean, it can take rocket attacks and stuff. I mean, it's pretty intense. But even with that, I mean, you've got, that's a wild card. You don't really know. You've got Secret Service personnel riding in vehicles, locked and loaded, ready, looking in the crowds for anything. That's standard procedure for that. But, I mean, that's a tough job, too. Even if you have full clearance to go, I mean, okay, someone has a selfie stick and you see it coming up three rows back.
And you think,
does that look like a barrel? Maybe.
Yeah.
Can't just unload, right? It's still a bunch of citizens, right?
Man.
I mean, it's going to be very, very nightmarish for anyone involved. You've got sniper teams that are going to be located all over the place. Mm-hmm. They actually have some pretty interesting technology out now mounting to vehicles. So even if there is a gunshot, it's actually able to detect range and direction from where that came from. So it makes it a lot easier from the pinpoint. If you got like a lone wolf sniper out there, one round goes off and it's some crazy sci-fi technology stuff. So, but they can say, oh, that's 1,300 meters away. It was at 270. Let's look over there. Oop, there's a building. Let's check it. You know, that's kind of crazy.
So a buddy of mine was at the, what was the name of it? The Root whatever country concert that got shot up in Vegas a few years ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he said the biggest factor there for the people that were, and like 50 people died. I mean, this was a serious tragedy. He said, we didn't know where the shots were coming from.
Correct.
People were running around, and everybody said, well, get down, get undercover. Well, how can you cover for when you have no idea which direction the shot is coming from?
Right, right. If you don't, yeah, exactly. Unless you can find something to jump inside of that gives you 360, you don't know which way to cover from. And something like that's even harder because likelihood, and I think not being there, you know, it's harder to say, but I would think most people pretty quickly figured out this wasn't coming from down below. So not only is
but at first they didn't know.
So not only do you not know which direction, but it's also coming from above. So you've got to be able to get lower than something else as well.
Wasn't it a couple of hundred yards away across on the, like the 11th floor of another? And then he told me that he usually concealed carries. He has a permit, and he said he had actually left his gun in the car. Mm-hmm. And he said he's actually glad he did, because had he pulled his gun out when the shot started to be fired, everybody would have thought it was him. And it could have been, I mean, he could have been killed or something, or at the very least arrested. And he said it was chaos. So that technology you talked about, being able to know where the shots are coming from, mm-hmm. is huge.
And almost instantly. I mean, it's intense. Yeah. It's really cool. They've had it for a while, but it's very impressive.
Is there other technology that you think might come into play in an event like this, at the inauguration in D.C.?
For sure, like stuff like signal jamming and stuff like that. That's been a pretty consistent practice for them for things like this and of this nature, in order to help prevent IEDs and stuff like that. Kind of block signals so you can't trigger stuff as he's moving around. I mean, for the main areas, I would expect various levels of metal detectors and pat downs and bag checks and all that. But I mean, those are only certain areas. It's not going to be everything.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be, it's going to be dicey. I don't know. I know this is a huge concern when Obama got in. There's a lot of talk of people saying, you're going to have all these, these racist guys coming out trying to kill him, because of this. And he kept walking outside the limo. And I've talked to some Secret Service guys that were around then. They were just like about to tear their hair out. Like, nuts, love, stay in the vehicle. Please do not get out.
I talked with a friend of mine who'd done some research on this. And he said the thing that they're not actually worried about terrorist organization. They're not actually worried about organized groups. He said the biggest worry for them, the security, are you mentioned the word lone wolf. The guys that go off by themselves, maybe have one gun or two guns they've hidden on their bodies, and they are able to get through. Because you're right. There's realistically, there can't be, especially if you got a motorcade, you can't stop everybody everywhere all along the street and metal detectors.
Across a huge portion of the city.
The lone wolves are the...
Because, you're right. Like terrorist organizations, unified groups, that kind of stuff. There's communication going on. Typically for something like that, you're looking at a much broader attack. So you have a lot more people involved. You also might be having stashed munitions, that kind of stuff. So it makes it... There's a lot more opportunities for detection, whether that's through just the intel gathering side or finding an explosive before you get there, that kind of deal. That's a lot easier to do than some random needle in a haystack that has one gun that didn't go through a checkpoint.
There's
a limit at which you can do on that, and that's the headache, right? I mean, it's a thankless job in many ways.
I'm asking you to speculate, and I know we don't like to speculate necessarily, but do you think someone will try something, maybe not the inauguration, but in the next few years?
I mean, I'm sure someone will try something to some level. Now, what that means, I don't necessarily know. We've had a couple people, obviously, that have gotten much closer than we're used to, obviously. But, I mean, every administration, there's people that plan stuff and at least go through the planning process and with the intent of going through with it that often are getting stopped. That's a normal occurrence. It's just usually that gets out first because most of these people are looking more for attention, and so they're able to find that before anything actually happens. But I mean, I wouldn't, if you told me it happened during inauguration or a little bit after, I wouldn't be surprised. I'll put it that way. I wouldn't be surprised.
Do you think, I go back to that guy that was able to climb up on a roof and actually take a shot and nearly kill Donald Trump during the campaign. It seemed like to me what happened there was a lot of people going, can he do that? He shouldn't, that guy probably shouldn't do that, right? And they even told a few people, but nobody really took it like serious that this guy was going to kill Donald Trump. It didn't seem like to me. Everybody was like, yeah, it's probably fine. That's what it felt like to me.
That's definitely the, at least through everything that we've seen and heard with our, the limits on what we've been told. That's definitely how it came across, right? Yeah. Everyone's just like, yeah, it's probably not great, but it'll be all right.
Maybe he knows somebody. Yeah. Maybe that's not really a
maybe
rival.
He's a plainclothes guy. I don't know.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's always been weird to me that anyone at all saw that and then there wasn't just an immediate clamp down. That's kind of crazy.
David Romer works at Modern Warriors, and part of, obviously what you guys do is you sell firearms and firearms accessories.
For sure.
With a new president coming in, and again, it is 5 days away, do you anticipate your industry changing at all with a new president?
I'm hoping so. especially on the regulatory side. I sincerely hope that he has made some comments about various things that he's planning on nipping in the bud that's been nightmarish from ATF and specifically this, I guess, technically still current administration.
Yeah, 5 days.
That's right. But yeah, I mean, there's been rumblings of some various things going on with that between certain options for ATF director, or I know a bill was just introduced to get rid of the ATF. He's come out and said he's getting rid of some of the rules that they've been trying to propose that keeps getting shot down in court, and just blanket get rid of that. I mean, there's definitely a possibility for a lot of good things to come in terms of our industry through this. Is it a guarantee? No. There's a lot on his plate, and you know, no one can do everything that they set out to do the way our government's set up. It just doesn't work. And so there's going to be a prioritization side of that, and hopefully some of that comes through. But we'll have to wait and see, you know. I hope, you know, there's plenty of opportunity for some quality stuff to come through, but you won't know till you really see it, I think.
I know there's a lot of people here in St. George that are hoping that the promised Northern Corridor will actually now be approved with the new administration, because the environmentalists, the NEPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, they all recommended, BLM all recommended that we put a parkway through right there. And I know a lot of people are like, no, that's not good. So, all right, David Romer from Modern Warriors. He is our firearms specialist. We're going to talk with him a little bit more when we come back after this quick timeout.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
Welcome back to the Andy Griffin Show. Today is the 15th day of January 2025. That's still weird to say. We were in 24. Yes. Dave, have you screwed up and written the wrong date yet?
Not yet, no? Shockingly. Okay. It's thrown me off every time I've written it. But
I did it once on the computer and once handwritten, filling out a form. And they were both like the first week of January. And then I was like, okay, I think I got this. That was 2025. The fact that, I don't know, I'm a numbers guy. The fact that 2025 is like this even, it's like a quarter of a century. It's 25. It makes it easier to remember for me than 24 or 26 would or whatever. So.
Yeah, maybe that's why. I don't know.
Yeah, something. Thank you, Dave, for coming in. So I'm going to tell you about an experience I had. We went out, not hunting, just shooting one time. Me and my sons and a couple of their friends, and everybody brought their long rifles. You know, we had a shotgun, a couple of shotguns. We had a couple of 22s. Everybody brought their handguns as well. And then my buddy pulled out a rifle called a Mosin.
Yeah,
I'm sure you saw. Yeah, I guess a Russian-made rifle, and sure it was really fun to shoot. Cool, man. And it kicks like a shotgun, kind of. I mean, it has a pretty good kick to it, and
it's a big round.
And after shooting for a few minutes, I'm like, man, I love this guy. I might get one of these. And he goes, well, I got to warn you. I said, warn me? Yeah, he said, yeah, the bullets that you fire from a Mosin, they're about $1.50 each. Mm. And I was like, wait, what?
Hold on.
Because I had just shot like a dozen, you know, and I'm like, wait, I just shot like 15 bucks, 17 bucks worth of rounds just now? And he goes, yeah. And I'm like, I felt bad. Number one, I said, let me give you some money. I said, but maybe I don't want a Mosin that much anymore. But
right.
It got me to thinking about it. And this happened back when, you know, right after the pandemic, when the ammo was seemingly insane, in short supply, and the prices were crazy. But it did get me to thinking, do people make purchases? Do they make decisions on what kind of gun to buy based on how much the ammo costs? Or should they make it based on that?
Yes and yes.
Okay. All right. No, good answers.
Yes, we do get that a lot. There's a lot of people that come in that, you know, you sit there and they might be a little more vague on what they're looking for, and like, man, I want it for this, and you know the price of it's not really that big of a deal. I just want something good. And so you start showing them stuff, and then it's like, well, what caliber is that in? Oh, well, that's 300 blackout. Oh, no. I only shoot 5.56 and 9 mil. Okay. Well, that's fine. You know, that's good. But let's then transition something else.
We got to change.
But I get it, and I've kind of for a while there, I didn't really care. I just got everything, and then there was a period I started shrinking back into. Here's some primary calibers. Yeah. Those are what I stock, and then let's find stuff for those. And I've got enough bases covered and stuff. I'll occasionally add a caliber that's something I'm not going to shoot a ton, just because it's fun and it's different. But it's as far as something like a serious use or something I feel like I need to like stock up on, I really don't venture out anymore, because the logistics side of it is often overlooked, but it's a real deal. Anytime you get a new caliber, you start to look at ammo.
Which is a box of ammo.
Which it might cost more, but even if it's the same, right, I don't have any of it, so I still have to buy it, a bunch of it to get stocked up to have enough for whatever I'm buying it for. But the other side is typically, I mean, most of the firearms nowadays are mag-fed. Most of those mags are not interchangeable with various calibers, so I probably need to buy new magazines as well, which often gets overlooked. And then depending on what you do with those mags, I mean, even if you're just going to throw them in like a pouch on your belt, that pouch may or may not fit those mags. Now you might need some new pouches, right? You kind of get some
all of a sudden slippery slope.
Oh man, I didn't even think about those, you know, calibers, like a lot of things, like there's certain ones that are really, I mean, they're built for a certain reason. There's somebody doesn't just dream of a caliber because it's like, well, this might work for shooting.
Yeah.
Right. This would be a great, I think this would work well for long range precision. This might work well for close quarter battle. This might work well for handguns.
Sure.
And so there is a purpose behind each, sort of like a vehicle. You buy a truck or a sports car or a van or whatever. Like, you're not buying those for all of the uses. They have their own niche. And so there are calibers that are better for certain things, but like those, like a vehicle, you can flex those into other things. It might not be the best at it, but you could make it work. So keeping ammo costs down or available is another big one. There's some really, really cool calibers out there, but you just can't find
them. Can't get them.
Right. Like if you want to hand load your own, cool. There's a lot of cool stuff you can do. Yeah. If you want to go buy it off the shelf, there's some of those. Have fun.
Yeah.
You know, like finding 408 Chi-Tac on the shelf is pretty tough. Yeah. It'll happen once in a blue moon, but be ready to load your own ammo.
Wow.
And it's something to factor in. You know, a lot of people don't have the time to do that, even if they have the money.
Right.
But money's a big factor, you know, and a lot of, I see this a lot on new shooters with handguns. There's a lot of new shooters that want, they're real recoil shy, right? And they've shot someone's super tiny little 9mm that was pretty snappy, and they're like, man, I don't want 9mm. I want something smaller than that. And that's, you know, fair enough. That's okay. But what they don't realize a lot of the time is like, man, I want a 380 or I want a 32 ACP. And, yeah, they're softer shooting. And you can get it even smaller if you really want something a little more compact to hide. But, I mean, 32 ACP LC on the shelf, maybe 1 in 10, 1 in 15 stores at all.
Wow.
And even if you do find it, you're going to start pushing dollar plus around.
I was going to say, law of supply and demand.
And it's just because there's not much out there. It's not because it's overly expensive to make comparatively to 9mm. But they may, I mean, you've got mil surplus, you've got LE surplus, you've got it as the most popular civilian round. You're going to find 9mm on the shelf anywhere. And just because of the volume in which they manufacture it, it is the cheapest handgun round, centerfire handgun round out there you're going to find.
Even in 22.
So 22 is a rim fire, it's going to be cheaper. But yeah, and that you can do handgun or long gun. That's going to be realistically your cheapest per round. If you want to go center fire for either rifle or handgun, 9mm is going to be your cheapest.
Okay.
And then realistically, 5.56 nowadays is going to be your cheaper on the center fire. It used to be the AK round, the 7.62-39, with some of the restrictions and then Ukraine kicking off, that price has skyrocketed. So it's now more expensive. But yeah, I mean, if you're trying to keep it cost effective and something easy to find, 12 gauge, 22, 9mm, 5.56, or /223, either one, you will find those anywhere in this country. Any gun shop, you'll find those. And they are going to be the cheapest of their various types running around.
That's actually something interesting to keep in mind. Not just the cost, but the availability.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't find it, it doesn't matter how much it costs if it doesn't exist or you can't find it.
Yeah.
That's huge. So, all right, well, keep that in mind as you're thinking about, you know, maybe I want to buy a gun. Maybe I, you know, and you say you get customers all the time. I want this and this and this in a potential handgun. and it may be, you know, you may check all the boxes and then find out, oh yeah, but you can't find ammo for that, and
right.
Or you have to order it special somewhere, and then all of a sudden it, you know, that's a box, a big box that's not checked,
right? So. Well, and especially the new shooter side, you see a lot of people wanting 380s, which is great. I mean, it's a great round for newer shooters, especially if you're looking for something really small and compact to carry. But when you start explaining to someone, you have no training yet, right? You're new.
Yeah.
You're going to pay 50% more per shot to shoot that versus a 9mm. Think how much more training you're going to get.
Yeah.
For the same money.
Not going to shoot as often.
Right. Yeah.
All right, Dave. We're out of time. Thank you for coming in today. It's always a pleasure.
No problem. Anytime. Thank you.
Andy Griffin Show. We'll be back tomorrow. Mayor Billy.